honest, yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So we know at this stage, Conan, we had 2 days to calm down. So this was announced on Tuesday. We know that now there are going to be no supporters. Instead of potentially getting them increased, which most GAA fans were hoping for, and considering the size of all the county grounds and the social distancing measures that could be put in place and how safely supporters could be in the ground. Outside the ground seems to be where the NPHET and the government are a little bit worried, but we'll get to that in a little while. So there's no supporters at the GAA grounds. GAA completely blindsided by this, Conan, given no pre-warning. And they reacted pretty strongly on Tuesday night. Following this evening's unexpected announcement, the GAA invites Dr. Ronan Glynn and NPHET to present the empirical evidence which informed the requirement for the association to curtail its activities. Like, I mean, there's been some criticism of the GAA for that statement, the cheek of them, you know, summoning the chief medical officer and all this kind of stuff. I don't see a problem with it. The frustration there, the GAA is on its knees, county boards are on its knees with not being able to get any income in. The measures that they've put in place, I don't see any criticism of it. Like, I mean, they're looking for some sort of proof to help supporters and help them understand why this has happened. What's wrong with that?
Like, I think it would be wrong if you weren't asking a question or looking to have a conversation about it. And remember, like, NPHET are putting forward recommendations. They're not making the decisions. The government are. So why aren't the sporting bodies in on these meetings when we're all making decisions? Like, the government are just taking what NPHET are saying, granted, like, they're the experts, and then they're just wholesaling, closing down fans, going anywhere. So why? Like, I saw the FAI, like, release a statement the same night the GAA did, but theirs was just very immediately adjusting to the new restrictions. Like, they didn't question anything. They just said, here's what's happening now in line with government guidelines. And for me, I was just really happy as a GAA person that at least they're asking a question. Can we sit down and talk about this? Can we get evidence? And yeah, I'm sure we get into it. If we had evidence, people would be a lot happier.
Well, that's the thing. And, like, I mean, there is an argument to say, why are they pulling in Dr. Ronan Glynn? Why not the Taoiseach? You know, it's the cabinet that decided on these restrictions, not NPHET. NPHET are the medical experts, and you know what doctors are like. They're conservative by nature. And, like, I mean, Ronan Glynn is a GAA man. He's played underage for Clare Galway, and his brothers have played for the club, and his family is steeped in the GAA, so he knows exactly what he's dealing with here, which makes it a little bit you know, more of a head scratcher. And he released a video last night. Apparently he was trying to explain himself, and I was none the wiser after hearing it. He was saying, we know there's clusters associated to sporting activity. Sporting activity is very broad. What about the GAA? You know, and what clusters? What are we talking about? There's GAA clubs shutting down over one case all over the country. Like, the reason the GAA is rightly annoyed about this is that they have been the most conservative out of any sporting organisation. Like, they were given the go-ahead to open up all their grounds by the government, I think it was on June the 9th, and they waited until the middle of July. Like, I've been lynching them here about how they're being so careful. Like, I mean, GAA clubs, like, if anything, Port Leash is to go by. Like, Cathair Healy arrived back from London, I think it was 3 weeks ago now, and Port Leash made him sit out his 14 days quarantine. Like, this is Cathair Healy, a club legend, and I think a lot of people need to take personal responsibility. Cathair wanted to come back training, would have known where he came from, and the message from Port Leash was like, we've done everything right up until now, you're sitting out your 14 days. Like, GAA clubs are being incredibly careful. They've all COVID officers. Like, I mean, there's been no outbreaks that anybody knows that's been put out in the public domain around training, around GAA matches. And I think this is why the GAA is feeling really, really hard done by, along with the financial implications of these crowds being banned.
You mentioned your criticism of the GAA at the start, and sure, like me, and you had plenty of arguments, because I was a wee bit more conservative as well. But, like, I'm actually fed up. I'm getting really pissed off at this idea, you know, that we should just be happy over a lot, happy that there's sport. Because, like, number one, and I know every sporting body is affected, but the GAA is more than just the players. That's the whole reason for the GAA. It's like everybody's involved in it, and without the people there, like, it's lesser than. I know the players are the most important, but, like, I've been cautious coming into all this. So is the GAA. And if this was a case where everything had to shut down, then I just accept that. But it's not. It's like they're trying to limit social circles, and they're targeting areas that I think won't have a significant impact. Like, you know, so it's just like those inconsistencies and the lack of real action and real problem areas. It's too hard to swallow. And, like, you know, Ronan Glynn, you mentioned him coming out yesterday, and he tried to explain a bit more some of the reasons, but I thought there were more questions, because he went through some of the clusters. He talked about the community transmissions, but then he lumped watching sport in with other social engagements, house parties, car sharing. Like, that's a quote from him. And, like, watching a game at the side of the pitch is not the same as going to a house party. It doesn't automatically mean you're at a house party four hours later. Like, you know?
It's absolutely silly. And here's another thing. Like, if they actually communicated with the GAA is huge. Like, I mean, it's at the centre of most communities. Like, it's massive, 500,000 members. And, like, I mean, that's just paid up members. A lot of people involved in clubs might even pay their membership. If I'm anything to go by, I think I'm still getting a letter about mine this year. But, like, I mean, it'll have to be paid. But at the same time, it's huge. And if politically, it's such an own goal. And, like, Micheál Martin is a lot of politicians attach themselves to sport when they're not really at all, because politically it looks good and stuff. But, like, I mean, you have to look at it. If NPHET and the government said to the GAA, we're concerned about supporters congregating outside, like, what can you do to make this safer?
Yeah.
We know they're safe inside the grounds. Your stadiums are huge. What can you do to make this safer outside the grounds? Every club is a COVID officer. Like, how hard would it be to have a COVID officer at the turnstiles and move people on after the game? Disperse them, if that's the issue. And it's only about 120 people in a huge stadium. We've talked about this before, Colin. It's a nothing argument as far as I'm concerned. And it's easily fixed. If that's your issue with before and after and turnstiles, have a COVID officer say, lads, come on now, move on. You know yourselves now, lads, these are the rules. And you know, this is not an unfixable problem. Like, this is the problem. How the GAA have just been lumped on this without even being given an opportunity to say, we can fix this little issue you have with that easily.
Bang on. Because, you know, I heard someone saying, well, if there's evidence of transmission because of car sharing, then that's the end of the argument. It's not, because, like, teams will still share cars. Like, me and you can share a car to go to a pub or a restaurant or the fucking airport. But, like, you know, can we target that event a bit more specifically, if that's really the problem? Like, you know, face masks, one family per car, whatever you want to do. Like, as you said, 120 people watching a game. Like, it's not relevant always to sharing a car or a house party or whatever it is they're concerned about. And this lying down and bowing down, I find it incredible, because, like, the contradictions, I'm sure we'll go through them, but, like, you know, the schools, the cinemas, the pubs, like, people will go into a pub now and watch the game instead of standing on the side of the pitch. And, you know, we're told that's all right because measures are put in place, but can we not put proper measures in place for sport? Like, if you have to watch sport, it's actually easier to put proper measures in place. 140 metres by, what is it, 90? That's a GAA pitch. You've got loads of room.
Leinster GAA chairman Pat Tehan, he was talking during the week. He says, as an organisation, we had looked to meet NPHET before any new measures were brought in, and we're disappointed that this didn't take place, because if it had, some of this confusion wouldn't be out there. Couldn't agree with that more. Why are they not meeting the GAA? Like, I mean, I've never seen such a reaction from the grassroots to something like this. It's just completely unfair. Now, Pat Tehan continues, what people might not know, about 4 weeks ago, we put forward a detailed document to NPHET about what we were looking for, was that grounds with a capacity over 5,000 be treated differently. Take a Moore Park in Portlaoise, for example. You could have put in six pods around the stadium, and you could segregate people into different pods. It means people could come in different entrances and leave through different exits. And we've said this on the show as well. These grounds are so big, you could fit 200, at least four 200s at the two sides, separated at both ends. They're that big. And have them coming in and out different exits, and have COVID officers outside. If anything, there should be an argument for making this, increasing this capacity, not completely banning it. Like, I mean, the Minister for Health, this Donnelly lad last night, did you see him on Virgin News? He's comparing opening up the schools. And this is the thing, sometimes you talk about the schools reopening and there's nobody here questioning that education is more important than sport. But sometimes you wonder, why is it always seen as more important than sport? Sport is incredibly important from, you know, a fitness and mental health perspective, which, you know, are kind of maybe, you know, not seen as important as other, you know, sectors of society. But he was on comparing the schools reopening. He says the schools are a controlled environment. You know, like going to a GA match isn't controlled. Like having people over to your house isn't controlled. Like we're all children. Mm. And then starts comparing going to school to playing sport and children bouncing on a trampoline. Like, I mean, you have to, you have to wonder about the people who are making these decisions. They were flagged about the meat factories. They were flagged about the direct provision. They were flagged about nursing homes, all happening in other countries. We're all being punished for their failures. There's no roadmap. There's no plan. Are we going into lockdown trying to get rid of the virus, or are we going to live beside it? We're the only economy that I can see in Europe that hasn't fully opened up. We've been wishy-washy, tiptoeing into doing it, and now we're going back. Are we even going back phases anymore? At least under Varadkar, we had four or five phases, and you move back one if we didn't reach our targets. Now certain sectors are moving back one, and others are allowed to stay open, and everybody's confused, and everybody's pissed off. And the final straw, as far as I'm concerned, has been the GEA supporters being shafted, and sports supporters in general being shafted for failures of the government.
Wishy-washy, like you said it, like that's probably the most frustrating thing and the most unfair thing of it all, because the whole way along under this new government, they haven't just made a decision. They haven't just come out and said, this is what we're doing. There's a lot of words like advise and we're asking people to, and it's like, is that the rule then? Is it mandatory? And then that's where liberties are taken. That's where people drop their guard, because they're not being told explicitly, this is what you have to do. And the Stephen Donnelly thing was a joke. Like that was the final straw for me. This is the Minister for Health. He's on talking about a risk reward, and I get that. Like, you have to live a little bit, and there's going to be a bit of a risk. But he's comparing like contracting the coronavirus to bouncing up and down on a trampoline. Like that was. Yeah.
But Conan, this living with the risk, there's a risk to everything. That argument directly contradicts the sporting exactly. one. You know what I mean? There's no consistency to any of this.
Because that same argument can be used for letting a few people stand around a pitch to watch a game. That's why it was so stupid.
Yeah, exactly. So there's no consistency. His full argument for the schools contradicts the argument for sport. And it's just getting to the point where we're actually sick of it. The GEA has written to NPHET and the government to get clarification on whether parents can actually drop their children off at a match and watch their child. Like, the GEA is to suggest to the government that one parent or guardian should be given permission to attend underage games where they consider it necessary for the welfare of their own child. Like, I mean, is that not a no-brainer or not? There is no way I'm going to be letting off my child to a match and not standing and watching it, like, I mean, separate from other people. This is just, it's farcical, really. It's just infuriating. It's caused confusion and child protection concerns in a number of counties at underage games in Dublin and Kerry for yesterday were already set aside. Like, I mean, the GAA have told clubs that no more than 40 team personnel, that's including coaches, backroom officials, medical personnel, can go into games at the moment. So you're looking at like the 80 pretty much that was already there, you know, that is directly associated, the 30 panel and then 10 extras, selectors, managers. That's all that's going to be allowed. So, like, I mean, there is definitely confusion regarding children. And there's definitely also confusion. Like, I mean, there's 30 allowed at a match, but only 15 allowed at training. Like, yeah, think about this. Like, I mean, honestly, it's so dumb that you really have to wonder. Like, you really have to wonder what these people were talking about for 3 hours in that meeting. Wouldn't you love to have been a fly on the wall? Like, I mean, you know, and apparently Varadkar had a go at Micheál Martin for not having a subcommittee meeting with NPHET to trash these things out before the cabinet meeting. And he's saying, this was leaked, he's saying to Micheál Martin, if this is the way you do business, we won't be doing business for much longer. And to me, looking from the outside, without being too political, it looks almost like that Micheál Martin is not very professional in the way he does things.
I thought he came out quite defensive yesterday as well from the very start, like, you know, as if he is being questioned maybe from within and just feeling that pressure from outside. And it was just the wrong tone to start off with, especially when you're asking people to disrupt their lives again. And like, yeah, like those inconsistencies as well are like, you know, that's why it gets really hard to just sort of accept it. Like you said, 30 people are ready to play in a match. So 31, the referee will be there, but only 15 trained. Like, and it seemed to me like they hadn't even thought through that eventuality. Like, and yeah. I hate that when it's not all thought through. Like, and they got asked then straight away when they said, you know, outdoor training can have groups of no more than 15. And then the first question was, what about sport? And it was sport will go ahead as normal. It's like, well, surely you know that's the contradiction. Yeah.
And I saw Donnelly was on primetime later on Tuesday night, and he was there, like he was interviewed for maybe 10 minutes, and he was interviewed about every restriction, and sport wasn't even mentioned. I actually think sport to some of these political people is such an irrelevance that it's not even like this sport thing could have been just something thrown in at the end of the 3 hours. Ah, look, yeah, well, Neffet said that there's some issues. I said, look, we'll just ban. It might have been everybody in favour, put your hand up, and that's it. Like, I wouldn't say it was trashed out or actually thought of in any sort of detail. Like, from the looks of it, we know about all the contradictions. You've mentioned it. Like, I mean, mass. What age profile of people go to mass? Old people. Right. So you're allowed 50 old people into a church, and you think old people, gossips like they are, aren't outside congregating outside mass and talking about the news of the week? Of course they are. Nonsense. So you're treating adults like children. You can play football, but you can't watch it. You can eat in pubs, but not have Sunday lunch with your parents and siblings. The gas thing is that you can actually go into a pub, order a pizza, drink 5 pints with strangers around. And we know that inside is fairly well distanced, but not smoking outside. You're just standing beside somebody, and you can watch that match on TG Cahir or on RT, but you can't go up into the fresh air and watch it. Like, I mean, think about this. It's just so bizarre. You can go to a wedding with 49 other strangers, but you can't have a barbecue with your neighbours who you know where they've been and what they've been doing all week. And you can send the children to school, but you can't go to work. Like the school one, like, again, we're not comparing. Education is very, very important, and most people will be in agreement. But from a safety point of view, if we're talking about from a safety point of view, school is very, very, very dangerous, you know, like, because children won't social distance no matter how, you know, well, the teachers are trying to police it, because by nature, children are just jumping on each other. And like, I mean, it's very, very dangerous, the schools opening. So if you want to be consistent here, and this is the problem, is they're not being consistent. If you want to roll back on sport and say this is seeping into the community, well, then school is absolutely the wrong thing to do. Are we going to go into a full lockdown, try to get rid of the virus? Then at least that's a direction. I wouldn't be in agreement with that, but I'd prefer it than all this wishy-washy stuff. Or are we just going to open up society and start treating adults like adults, and old people, instead of telling them to restrict their movements? Old people aren't stupid. They know there's a virus out there. They are restricting their movements anyways. You know, like, treat adults like the most frustrating thing about this is we never opened everything up. Even if you opened everything up like Spain and France and Germany, you have to roll back on something. Then you could kind of accept that a little bit more. But we never even got there. We've been just terrified of the smallest little thing. We've ignored the meat factories. We've ignored the direct provision. And now we're all suffering because the government have got it ours. And to add insult to injury, Conan, here's the last one I have on the list here before we move off this. I nearly fell off my chair when I read this. The Department of Arts has confirmed that cinemas, galleries and theatres can continue to operate with 50 people indoors and 200 outdoors as long as appropriate measures are in place. They are given the opportunity of putting measures in place. Sport is not. Please explain that one to me. Like, I mean, this is just honestly, this government have lost the public completely. And like, I mean, I genuinely believe that now, that they've lost it.
They have. And actually, I was listening to a podcast with Peter Lund, you know, the behavioral scientist, and he said there was a study. If you want people to comply for the public good of a particular behavior, if they somehow feel that they're being asked, like what they're being asked is unfair, then like they'll reduce their compliance, even if that's a cost to themselves, because it's almost like a form of protest. And if they feel like what they're being asked is unfair, they will no longer go along with it. And at the time when everything was being shut down, obviously nobody wants to go back into a complete lockdown, but when everything was being shut down, everybody was on board, everybody was complying. You didn't want to be the one to step outside of that sort of the social norm, I suppose. But now it's like they're attacking the virus where the virus isn't, or like you were certainly not as much cases. And I don't know, it's very deflating. And like, you know, psychologically and physically, like, you know, from a virus standpoint, like physically, surely it's good to be outside. And you know, and having people in the fresh air in their heads watching a game like that, that was a great thing for the country, even if it was only 120 people. And it's been taken away, and it doesn't seem like it's fair that it's taken away.
No, and it's it'd be interesting to see what happens Laois, Kildare and Offaly, because they're meeting on that today, about lifting those restrictions. Laois and Offaly have had very few cases. They're down the list. They're behind the likes of Clare and Limerick and Tipperary now. Whether theirs will be lifted, Kildare have gone the other way. So I have no doubt Neffet will take credit for fixing Laois and Offaly because of the restrictions, and they'll blame the public and the GAA and Sporting Kildare or something like that. Like, that seems to be the way they're doing it, because the restrictions have had zero effect on Kildare in the 2 weeks. And in Laois and Offaly, Laois was correcting itself anyway. It wasn't a big outbreak, and they seem to be going okay. So it'll be interesting to see how they'll try to take credit for Laois and Offaly, but you know, they won't be able to, you know, the opposite will be for Kildare. So it'll be interesting to see how politically they're going to kind of wriggle out of this one. But we'll wait and see that later on. Ulster GAA is where it's at, Conan. 400 still at matches up there. So there, the chief executive of Ulster GAA, Brian McAvoy, said, at the minute, we'll continue as we have until instructed otherwise. We've imposed our own restrictions depending on the size of the venue and how well people can social distance. So that can be between 200 to 400 spectators. We've received advice from authorities that some venues can hold many more, but we're responsibly self-regulating. Very sensible stuff. Like, I mean, we've imposed our own restrictions depending on the size of the venue. So they'll let 200 in maybe to a small GA ground and then 400 into the county grounds. That seems perfectly logical. And I think everybody in the Republic would snap your hand off for that kind of, you know, sensible kind of management.
Yeah, but like that's a good example of the madness of this whole thing, of what's happening in the Irish government. Like, you know, if you're in Donegal or Monaghan, for example, like, you're still in Ulster, but, you know, you're not allowed to have anybody at the game. And you go a mile down the road, yeah, in some cases, you're across the border and everything's fine up there. It's just, I get that it's two separate governments running it, but we're like right beside each other. And like, you know, one government said it's fine, the other one said it's not. And I don't know. I'm getting very, very upset. The only bright spark I can see with this is maybe later in the year we'll have a GAA championship up in the six counties, and that'll be a well-deserved break for the Ulster people.
That'll be the All Ireland. I'm just frustrated. I'm frustrated that supporters are not being allowed in, but I'm more annoyed about the pure stupidity of it. Do you know what I mean? That's what's frustrating me more, and the lack of clarity and the lack of you know, detail and just the lack of transparency, really, about helping us to understand where you came to this reason. And there will be completely understandable if we've got, you know, good reason for it. But at the moment, we don't see good reason for it. And that's where the frustration is coming from. The inter-county season looks in big trouble now, Conan. John Prenti was saying, he's the Connacht, he's Connacht PRO, isn't he? I just have his name down here. Yeah, he is. I'm pretty sure he is. He said, if it's going to be 500, this is talking about the crowds. If it's going to be 500, I don't know if it'd be worth having any crowds. When he's talking about the limited attendance, he says, because you see the hassle clubs have with the 200 limit. So what if you have Mayo and Galway in the Connacht final and there's only 500 tickets? It would be easier to have nobody. I don't get that attitude. It would be better to have 500. But I think the way this is going, Conan, I think inter-county looks like it could be behind closed doors, because when the schools reopen, this thing's going to kick off. We know that. And like, I mean, there's no, in my mind, there's no doubt about that. I think the inter-county season will go behind closed doors. Then it's going to be a complete loss maker because of the cost to county boards preparing teams and getting nothing back out of it, the GAA getting nothing back out of it. What is the point of the inter-county season? Should we just play provincial club and Club All-Ireland and finish up at the end of November and have no inter-county this year and finish the club straight out? I think financially, with no crowds, that's probably what we're looking at.
At the minute, it seems that way. The only thing I'll say is that, like, throughout the last 5 months, is that this has all moved so fast in every different direction. Like, you know, a week seems like such a long time, and you can come full circle in your thinking in that time. But like, the inter-county season wouldn't be taking place until November, like the very end of October. So you're still a good two and a half months out from that. So 10 weeks or whatever. You know, it could change by then. And I know, like, a lot of, like, professional football and stuff, they're looking at trying to get crowds back in, and they're talking about September, October, November. They're looking to see what they can do, basically. But I agree. Like, I remember saying this at the time, that there's no real point, there's no real incentive for the GAA to put this on if they're not going to make any money out of it, and that's where they make most of their money. But I'd say they're definitely not going to make a decision, because that's such a long time away.
I understand it, but I don't think they won't be making a decision. But if the GAA have any brains now, they'll have a contingency plan, and they will be working in the background what happens when they need to look forward and not be like the government and that Eamon Ryan saying we got caught off guard. Imagine getting caught off guard. imagine you know, the leader of the Green Party saying we got caught off guard, and Donnelly pretty much saying the same thing, that they got caught off guard. Caught off guard. Everybody's been talking about potential spikes and stuff like that. And like, I mean, apparently now that tracing and testing is nowhere near what it should have been. And doctors and different medical professionals went to other departments when they thought everything was okay. Like, I mean, this is just complete incompetence as far as I'm concerned. But that's my point, that the GAA should definitely have this working away in the background, that when that decision, you know, needs to be made in October, that we have, you know, that we have something that we can work forward with.
Well, what I think the GAA should do, and this is like a good way of trying to preserve money, like they'll take a hit in the short term whilst there's still no inter-county championship. But say like there's not going to be any crowds November, December, whatever it is, I would just keep pushing the championship back. So then you could start that in February. The 2020 championship starts in February. Get rid of the league, because like, it's not a big money maker for them anyway. Maybe TV wise it is, but the championship's bigger. And then have the club people won't like this, but like look at having the inter-county season 2021 or the championship later in the year again. So you have two championships in the 1 year. Just keep knocking it back so you're not losing it. And then most importantly, the counties and the clubs aren't losing the money that will generate.
Right, yeah, but I say you'd be constantly chasing your tail then, you know, maybe pushing it back. But look, it definitely is an option for them. But there's talk now that this split season is going to happen. So the GAA officials are going to will come back to the task force in 2 weeks. This task force committee, they had yesterday evening, they had that fixtures task force meeting. This is on the back of the GPA's proposal that the inter-county season be played off from February until the end of July, 23 weeks, and then clubs start in August. There's huge support for this, Conan, with the fixtures task force meeting. The only thing that is up for debate is whether there's a special Congress at the end of this year to bring it in for next year, or we go next year with our same, you know, the same structure as this year, and we bring it in for 2022. That's hugely positive. Like, I mean, it's hugely, hugely positive that the intercounty season will be condensed for players. I would say that will result in the National League becoming the championship. Like, it seems the only logical thing to do in 23 weeks. Having a league as it is now and then a championship might be a little bit harder to do. But it'd be interesting to see what the fixtures task force come up with in fitting the championship in, or fitting a season into 23 weeks. John Horan's behind this. Like I said, the fixtures task force meeting is behind it. And other prominent GAA officials are keen to see the season split next year. So the only thing up for debate, this is going to happen. It's just a matter of whether it happens next year or the year after. This is what people have been campaigning for years and years and years. And it's kind of slipping under the radar here. This is massive. And it doesn't seem like news because of the whole kind of, you know, furore around the supporters getting into grounds.
And there's a bit of a conflict of interest there as well, though, isn't there? Like with regards to making it in 2021, because John Horan obviously wants his Telton Cup proposal to come through. And like it looks like that. Well, I wouldn't get knocked in the head, but like that.
No, I think that the B Championship has to be part of, and that was the remit for the fixtures task force. A B Championship has to be part of any championship structure.
Yeah, so then I suppose you could still go ahead and do it. And we've seen now, like, I think that's a frustrating thing from all our point of view, is that the GAA, when they had to act, they acted quick and they were able to split the championships the way they've done it here. I can just imagine somebody in the CPA having a heart attack now when they hear me proposing two inter-county championships in the 1 year.
In other news then, this is the last bit of news, because it has been dominated this week, is that Niall Carew has been appointed as the Carlow's new manager. So he's after getting 2 years in charge of Carlow. Is this year counted as a year? I'm not sure about that now. Like, I mean, we have to see. So this year is going to be a very short year. So is this year and next year? So like one and a third year, because he's already missed many 5 league games. He's getting the last 2 league games. So maybe is it this year and 2 more? I'm not too sure. But his coach is our very own Ger Brennan, and he joins us on the line now. How's it going, Ger?
Not too bad, Woody. Not too bad. How are you?
All good. I hope this appointment doesn't affect your position on the GAA hour now.
I might have a bit of extra insight now that I'm actively involved in a county setup, but maybe it'll add a bit more value to the GAA, or you get a couple of more listeners.
Yeah, whatever you do, don't tell Niall Carew you're doing it. So just keep this on the down low, right?
No bother.
So come here. This is a very strange appointment, really, Ger, in the fact that you're coming in mid-season, which in soccer it's not unusual. In GAA, it's very unusual.
No, it is. I suppose, throughout the country, everything that people have been experiencing the last few months is obviously all new, and getting back to Gaelic games and matches taking place over the last whatever 4 or 5 weeks has been obviously challenging as well for club teams, and then to have an appointment like this where the Carlo Football Championships will kind of run right up to the last eight in September, where you can play club championship. There'd be very limited prep time in getting the squad up and running, but from reading and listening to the conversations around Turok O'Brien stepping away, it looked as it was a decision to give a new management team an opportunity just to get to know the fellas in as brief a time as will be available for us this year, all going well, with the view of being better prepared going into the National League then next year. But no, it's certainly a strange one, all right.
Yeah, so like, I mean, I suppose the two National League games, I think Carlo are kind of out of the promotion hunt, so you can properly get to know the players in these two games without a huge amount of pressure on them.
Yeah, exactly, and it's Sligo is due to be played the middle of October, but then there's a bye against London because of the travel restrictions. So it'll only be one game really, and then it's October the last weekend. It's awfully rather the last weekend of October, and so I suppose we'll get an opportunity to have a look at what Offaly are doing in their two last league games as well. But it'll be a short kind of sharp season with the squad, and again, if we can just get a very simple, achievable game plan up and running for the short season that we're going to have with the lads, that'll be a bit of progress. But look, ultimately, you're looking towards the next couple of seasons and trying to get promotion now, Division 4 up to Division 3.
Right. So this season isn't seen as one of your 2 years in charge. It's next season and the year and the season after. This is just seen as a two and a quarter seasons or two and a half seasons. Is that it?
Two and a quarter seasons, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So again, very unusual and strange, as you said at the outset there. But it'll be a good chance, just a better opportunity to get to know guys going into the National League when it does start in next February or that.
So, I suppose
another 2 years on top of this then.
Right. Okay. And I suppose as a coach, you're saying keep things simple because you don't have enough time. You know, the Carlo players have been kind of programmed in one way under their former coach. Is there a temptation there just to continue on that for this year and start afresh? Or, you know, are you going to try and think of changing things up?
Well, I suppose to be authentic, Woolly, as a manager and as a coach, if you are simply borrowing fully from a predecessor without endorsing it fully yourself, you won't come across particularly well, I would say, in your coaching and your communication with players.
True.
But I think it's a case of identifying the positives in the previous game plan, and I guess looking to integrate your own style of play with it, and make as much as a positive impact as you can in the short season that hopefully will be ahead of us, with the view of a bigger body of work then going forward into next season. But yeah, you wouldn't throw the toys out with the bathwater in terms of how Carlo have set up over the last couple of seasons. And in fairness, it has borne success. They got promoted from Division 4 to Division 3 for the first time in, I think, 31 years. Very unlucky, not to say, in Division 3. A couple of results, tight results, just kind of went against them. So what they were doing was fruitful. But I would certainly look to adjust and evolve and build on some of the good work that had been done by Tourick O'Brien and Stephen Poacher over the last 4 or 5 years.
And where is your connection with Niall Carew? Where did you come across each other?
So Niall, when I was in Maynooth, Woolley, Niall managed me for nearly 3 seasons playing Sigerson, and I have to say I have a lot of time for Niall from that experience, and we've kept in touch over the years and through my own playing career, and we've just always had a very strong relationship there. But Niall is again a super guy for anyone who's played under him at club or county would attest to it, I'm sure. But very much player focused and obviously ambitious then as well, from his own managerial goals. So yeah, I've just always been close to Niall Woolley and someone I trust, and someone that so it's me starting out, I guess, on an inter-county journey, wherever it may lead. I'm looking forward to learning an awful lot from him then as well, and the few ideas then I have from my experience at, I guess, Dublin and colleges and county over the years, just to bring that to the table then as well.
We know the way you play football, you're kind of like an on-field general, so you would look to me from the outside as being a natural fit to go into management, and you're obviously something that you're trying to break into. You're managing Bray Emmett this year. You beat Rathnew, which I'm sure you really enjoyed considering the shock he had down there a few years ago, but that's something, it's definitely something that you're building towards, Ger, is like, you know, increasing your experience and eventually inter-county management.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Woolley. That would certainly be down on my list of things to do in the next probably 3 to 5 years. So obviously retiring from Dublin after 2015 season and going straight into UCD in head of Gaelic Games there. It's a lot of administration involved in the role as well, but I also stepped away from St. Vincent too. I know I'm back doing a small bit there, but you kind of miss the buzz of being fully immersed in one particular squad and trying to get the best out of guys, and obviously my teaching background then as well, working in an all-boys school, the bit of crack that you have with lads and trying to bring those guys on and develop them. It's something that I would feel that I'm good at. I'm in my elements when I'm in that kind of zone and trying to help get the best out of people. And if I can, I suppose, substitute the word teaching and learning to kind of coaching and learning. Not to be thrown in buzzwords or phrases, but that's how I would see it, that you have a similar process as I would have in the classroom to how you would go about preparing your team and getting your session up and running, and have a very much kind of outcome orientated, that there's a bit of clarity as to why you're doing a particular drill or working on a particular skill, and that guys can begin to see the impact that it'll have on their individual performance, and then that obviously feeds into the collective. But I'm doing a lot of waffling here, Woolley. I don't know what you asked me, but remind me what the question was.
Well, come here. We'll finish up with Vincent's, because I saw Ger Brennan coming on as a late substitute. I was comparing you to Conor McGregor on the show here on Monday. Yeah. So did they twist your arm? How did this come about? Brian Mullins come up, cap in hand at your front door.
No, well, I rang Brian, to be honest, to ask, well, could I come back? And that's the truth of it. I'm living close to Mossy Quinn up in Port Marnock, and during the lockdown, just out for a couple of little runs and kickabouts here and there, and the bit of motivation and appetite just reappeared from I don't know where. But I guess given how short the season is, Woolley, I was relatively minded myself, and a bit of motivation was there. I said, you know, it'd be great to get out, get kicking again, move with the club, and if I can add value and to the training sessions and support the bigger picture in terms of what the team are trying to achieve and help some of the younger guys, I felt it was a worthwhile a phone call to make to Brian, and yeah, here I am. We're in the quarter final against Tim McCudd Saturday week, so Just keeping the head down and trying to wait for that. But no, I was delighted to get a run, to be honest, against Clontarf, and they obviously haven't played in nearly 2 years, so it was great to get out there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, we'll keep our eye out for you. I'm sure that game will be on the television. It's one of the bigger quarterfinals in Dublin. And best of luck with Carlow. I'm going to have nothing to give out about it with Carlow now that Poacher's gone and you're in. So, like, I mean, it's a coach that I didn't like being replaced by a coach that I do like. So there you go. That's me giving out about Carlow. God, Ger, thanks very much for taking the call.
That's all, Woody. God bless.
All right, great stuff from Ger there. We will be back and we'll take a look ahead to the matches at the weekend.
He gave me back then was we were in the Glen Royal on a night out, and I'd never met him before, and he put his arm around me and he said, "You won't go too far wrong if you win the ball and give it to me." I said, "All right, well, okay."
It's great advice.
Yeah, it was. For you.
All right, so the matches to look out for, Conan. On TG Cahir on Friday night, we have Austin Stacks and Dr. Crokes. And I was looking at this thinking, Austin Stacks, have they made a mistake here? Is that not supposed to be Ken Mayer? And of course, it isn't supposed to be Ken Mayer, because that's the club, that is the other county final, and this is the divisional county championships that's starting. So this is the first round of their divisional county championships. So likes of East Kerry, David Clifford's East Kerry, who are the defending champions and favourites, they're entering the equation now. Killarney Legion play Cairns O'Rahilly's, is probably the biggest game of the first round outside of Austin Stacks and Dr. Croke. So this would be a great game on paper. Like, I mean, at the same time, like, Austin Stacks have to play Ken Mayer. And I was trying to find out, when is that county final going to go ahead? And apparently, Austin Stacks and Ken Mayer have been told that that county final, Conan, is going to go ahead when both are out of the divisional county championship. So they've no idea when this county final is on. So if Austin Stacks or Ken Mayer make the county final of the divisional, the county final won't be on until after the inter-county championship. Isn't that desperate? Like, I mean, it's very, very messy down there.
It is. I know, like, obviously this is their priority, this one.
This is the more important one, yeah.
But, like, I didn't even think of that angle, because I was thinking, oh, that's fine if they go out of the county, then they can just play the club final later on, and that's grand. But I forgot about the inter-county season coming in, and then pushing that right back. And remember last year, obviously, Austin Stacks had to go represent Munster, because they won the club final. So it's a real mess. This is a cracker game, though, Stacks and Crokes. It's such a... such an appetizing one, and Crokes being the wounded animal that they are after the Ken Mayer game, and Kieran Donaghy apparently absolutely bullying boys in the full forward line again. So I'm actually really looking forward to this.
Yeah, no, definitely it'll be a good one for Friday night. But it'll be interesting to see, actually, if East Kerry win the county final again, there won't have been another club. Oh, there's no provincial championships. Well, okay, so say the intercounty season is over, is cancelled, and you run off the provincial clubs. The East Kerry couldn't represent Kerry, so you'd go to the other club champions, which wouldn't have been played. So Kerry would have to make sure that Ken Mayer, Austin Stacks game is played to see who represents Kerry. Anyways, like I said, it's a little bit messy. And then on Sunday they have Coola versus St. Bridget's and Wexford county final between Shelmaliers and Navana. We'll get to that now in just a minute. RTE on Saturday night, they're down in Clare for the Clare hurling quarterfinals. Broadford versus Six Mile Bridge, Ballyea versus Kilmally. Ballyea, Six Mile Bridge, and Cratlow, the three favourites for that one. Cratlow obviously have those issues, so they're not playing this weekend. I would have liked if RTE had gone up to Mayo, Colin, to cover the Ballina versus Knockmore after Paul Ricohora's interview. And let's see, there could be a bit of bite in that one. Westport Castlebar have a huge game in Mayo to see who tops that group. And if Briefy beats Charlestown, which they probably will, Westport or Castlebar could go out, despite, you know, Westport winning and drawing the first two games. So that's a huge game, Westport Castlebar. Ballina, Knockmore, two huge clubs in Mayo. Pádraig O'Hara, after throwing a little bit of trash talk into the mix, that's another big game. So would have liked if they had I suppose RT, from a financial point of view, it makes more sense just to go down to the one ground and do the double header, you know, rather than show one hurling somewhere and one football somewhere else.
does it really show you the value of trash talk? Because now, like, you're looking forward to this game, I'm looking forward to this game, and it doesn't matter, Ballina and Knockmore are both through, but you know that they're both going to be well up for it. Like, and it's actually good that they've both absolutely hammered the other two teams, so they're coming in and fine fettle, but according to Particle Horror, there's no way they're going to lose to anybody. So, like, I would be tuning in for this one.
Yeah, no, definitely. That's we're going to look forward to that. Like I mentioned, the county final in Wexford. This is the first county final of the season. We know Wexford are running it off pretty quickly, and it's a novel final between Shell Maliers, like I said, and Navena. The first time these two teams have ever met each other in a county final. And to help us look ahead to this one, Wexford legend and Abhlart de Balla manager Liam Dunn just joins us on the line. Liam, I'm not sure how you're going to feel looking at this county final. I'm sure you'll be thinking that you should have been in it yourself.
Well, look, I mean, we had opportunities there, you know. Bitter pill to swallow, I suppose, a few days ago. We led the game for 60 minutes. You know, I think Corey led the game for 4 minutes. We got caught in the fourth minute of injury time where Conor McDonald scored a point and they won the game. And look, fair play to him. We had chances and opportunities to put him away and we didn't do it. And maybe just our game management at the end of it, you know, maybe cost us a little bit, but I couldn't fault the guys for effort. They gave everything they had, and to be fair to Gorey, like they stuck at it there, and you know, I think they've won three of their games so far this year by a point. But look, a point wins a game, as you know well, Colm, and they got over the line, and fair play to them, and the best of luck to them there on Sunday.
Yeah, it definitely is. Like, I mean, I'm looking at the Wexford Hurling Championship from the outside, and it's very unpredictable now, Liam, isn't it? Whereas in years gone by, Abhlart are nailed on for this all throughout my playing career, pretty much anyways. Now you have Shell Maliers, you have Gorey, you have St. Martins, you have St. Anne's, you have a whole load of new teams into the mix.
That's right. You know, we were very fortunate there, as it was in the early 2000s there, that a team came along where you had two different groups of players probably within 3 or 4 years of one another that were exceptional hurlers and committed as well to the cause, to be fair. And you know, we were very successful. I think we contested 13 county finals there in 14 years at one stage and won 10 of them and lost 3. But as you know well, you know, things have to change and age catches up on guys and different things, and you know, at the same time, you can't go on forever, and we had our time. And you know, over the last number of years, you know, St. Martins have came very strong. You know, the Anns were in the county final last year. Gorey won the county final in 2018. Shell Maliers won in 2014. So there is, it has levelled off big time there in Wexford now, and you know, anybody could win it down there. You know, there's about 6-7 teams have a chance now that can actually win it, where say Abhlart dominated there for a number of years, but that's not the case anymore now.
Yeah, definitely. So you had a rebuilding job when you came back into Abhlart. You obviously managed them before successfully before you took over Wexford, but they hadn't made the quarterfinals in the last 2 years. So you had a difficult enough job, I suppose, coming back in.
It was difficult, all right. But look, I managed them. I had played in 5 county finals with the new group that were coming that time. We'd won 3 and we'd lost 2, and Kevin Ryan was the manager then, and Kevin was moving on to Carlow inter-county level that time, and I just walked straight into it that time. Hadn't a clue what I was doing, really, to be honest with you. But a lot of people at the time said you shouldn't do it, you'd be too close to the players and that now there that time. But I took them over for 3 years in 9, 10 and 11, and you know, we won the county finals. It was the first time we'd ever won 3 in a row, and just sort of try to change the mentality and, you know, to try and give Leinster a, you know, the respect that it deserved, and with the team we had as well to knuckle down. And I had told lads earlier in the year, the first year, that if we won a county final, we would train the following morning after to get ready for a Leinster championship. And
really,
that's what we did.
And down through the years, was the Wexford championship more of an aim for Abhlart than the Leinster? Like, would they kind of tune out for Leinster a little bit?
Well, look, we had won county finals before, and we got beaten in the Leinster Club final in 94 and 95, and we won, got beaten in semi-final in 97. But I just felt that, you know, we needed to change things to try and give this one hell of a lash, and we did it as well. But look, I was involved with 2 teams there that we got beaten in 2 Leinster Club finals in a row, and I stepped away then and moved on to Wexford, and the boys kept winning county finals, and we ended up losing 4 Leinster Club finals in a row. And but look, to be fair, there were tough pills to swallow. For whatever reasons, we were beaten by better teams and didn't perform on different days. And But they stuck at it, and you know, they came back and they won a Leinster club final afterwards. But you know, saying that Pearcy beat them then in extra time in a semi final.
Yeah, great game.
So.
Yeah.
But along the lines, Colm, you know, we were meeting good teams as well, and that's as Gorey and the Shelmaliers and St. Martins have found out over the last number of years. Like it's a minefield out there, and it's not easy to get over these Ali Hales of this world and different teams as well. So
yeah.
But I always felt, even though we didn't get to the Leinster Club final the first year in 2009, the year first year I managed the team, we went to extra time with Ballyhale Shamrocks and Wexford Park, and they beat us by 2 points. But I would always, looking back now, I would have felt that that was actually the year to get it, like, you know, to go the whole way, really, to be honest with you. It didn't happen for different reasons. Michael Fenley and Henry Shefflin and TJ Reid are different. You know,
that was a brilliant Ballyhale team. That was a better team than the one they have now, sure, for God's sake. That was an unbelievable team when they were doing battle with Portumna at that time, weren't they?
Yeah, they went all the way with Portumna that year now. But we were 11 to 4 points up at half time, or before, in the first half in that game. Like, but you know, Ballyhale, they're what they are, you know, they're able to come back, kick any team, get goals at certain times before half time, and unfortunately, we lost by 2 points in extra time. But again, I couldn't fault the commitment and the effort out of these guys that I was getting that time, and we tried to push it on again, and we won championships the following 2 years and got to 2 Leinster Club finals after that with myself before I stepped away. And but this is a new crew now, you know. I was involved with them last year, and again, Colm, Gary Moore stuck a line ball over the bar in the 4th minute of injury time. You couldn't believe it as well, to draw the game, and we went out on scoring averages to get into the quarterfinals.
Right.
Which was tough as well last year. You know, we'd won the league down in Wexford for a 4th year in a row, but it was the championship was the one that we were wanting to perform in better. So this year again, to get caught in the 4th minute of injury time again.
Jeez, yeah, sticking her.
You know.
You didn't get off to a great start this year. You conceded 5 goals and 19 points. Was it St. Martin's and Sean Murphy got a straight red card? I would say you were thinking, what the hell's happening here? But you recovered brilliantly.
Yeah, well, look at the first round. You know, I looked on it differently, to be honest with you. Like, we came back in June with the pandemic and everything that happened there, and playing St. Martin's, who were the favourites to win the championship. And, you know, there's a lot of young talent down there. John Myler was in over him this year as well, which is going to add to him as well. But we conceded, as you said, 5 goals, 19 points. We scored 3 goals in 16. Sean got put off, which was a very harsh decision, to be honest with you, which he got rescinded afterwards. But look, we regrouped and knuckled down and got back again after that.
Yeah. Your son Billy's on the team. How is that dynamic work? Are you harder on him trying to compensate for people thinking you're too easy on him?
Well, not really, no. I mean, he's found his own place there now this year, really. You know, there was more consistency in his play. And look, we lost so many players over the last year that in the club, which was unfortunate for different reasons, and other guys just had to stand up and look at, you're representing your club. And for our guys, really, to get over the Clavon game in the group stage, to get into a quarter final, something we hadn't done for the 2 years, was a huge monkey off the back for the team itself. And from there, then we pushed it on to play St. Anne's, and you know, with a fantastic performance against St. Anne's and beat them, and then we put in another really good performance against Gorey, but unfortunately we came up short.
Yeah, when you finished with Wexford, was it a couple of years off? Because you obviously played 16 years as a player with Wexford, and then you were in with Tom Dempsey with the minors, and then you were over Owlert, like we're talking about. Then you were 5 years with Wexford. You hadn't a chance to stop and breathe, I'm sure.
No, and Lucas, the year I finished up then with Wexford, I was just, the way it happened, I was looking to stay on another year.
Yeah.
Certain things happened there, you know, time moves on, and in hindsight, Colm, it was the best thing that ever happened for me that I didn't stay on, and it was good for the team as well, to be honest with you, you know, because it was a tough gig there with Wexford for starting off, to be honest with you, because, you know, Wexford were going really well with the footballers, all Leinster finals, all Ireland semi-finals, National League finals. There was the Lee Chins, Andrew Shores, Dermot O'Keefe, Liam O'McGovern, all these guys were in with the footballers.
Nice,
the football was the game down in Wexford, and you came in and you sort of had to start again, really. And from that juvenile team that I was involved in with Tom and the minor team, I brought 11 of those guys into the senior setup. And actually last year when they won the Leinster final, Sean Murphy sent me a photograph from the dressing room with seven of them that had played in the Leinster final last year at senior level that had been with me for those 4 years. So it was a nice photograph to get. Apart from Dean Moore McGovern had the jersey tucked or had it inside out, all right, which was a ruined photograph.
Well, I saw a quote from Dermot O'Keefe actually, and we had him on the show and we were talking about it after the one that Leinster, and he name checked you. He said, in fairness to Liam, or this all started with Liam Dunn back in 2012, in fairness to Liam, he brought us on a hell of a long way in the 5 years that we had him. And like, you know, that's kind of quote stuck out to me because it was the whole thing about Davy, and rightly so, you know, Davy gets so much of the limelight. It was very nice for Dermot O'Keefe, I think, as a player to name check the work that you did.
Oh, yeah, look, I had him on the county minor team when he was juvenile, you know, I knew all these fellas as well, but I knew myself coming into the Wexford setup, look, I was wanting to win silverware and everything, Colin, to be honest with you, know, but certain people were saying to me, you know, Dean Griffin, Seamus Howden, Lord of Mercy on him, would have said to me, he was former county chairman, Leinster chairman, you know, he would have said to me, if you can leave Wexford in a much better place than when you took it over, you've done a good job. But it was a rebuilding job again as well. Like, and I think that was one of the main reasons why Liam Griffin pursued me to take it on that time, because I hadn't really any great call for, to be honest with you, to take the Wexford job. I wanted to stay on with Owlert, but I took it on. But I suddenly realised the massive job it was, to be honest with you. But you're not just managing a team, like you're managing a business for the county board, to be honest with you, from sponsors to the whole group of, from physios to nutritionists to sports psychologists to S&Cs. There's just so much involved in it and all. It was really good for my own development as well, to be honest with you. I learned a huge amount, and, you know, it's out there and it's known. I mean, problems the players have, and I was a player myself for 16 years at Wexford, but, you know, the pressure that's on players and different things as regards from gambling to alcoholism to everything, like, you know, it's out there and you have to deal with it, and the pressure on players now is just phenomenal, like. But I enjoyed the experience as well now, you know, but when it was over, it was over, and I was sort of, when the dust settled, I was happy that I was out with Colin, to be honest with you. And it wasn't until the following February that I got a phone call from the chairman of the Ballantyre St. John's club up in Dublin, Ken Ahern, asked me would I meet him in Dublin when I was working up there with Stafford Fuels, and one day, and when I met him, he had three other stalwarts from Ballantyre, and Sean Lane and Shane Cassery and Brian Sutton, and the four of them convinced me to get involved with Ballantyre St. John's, who were in Division 2 of the league up there in Dublin, and their aim was to get out of Division 2 to get into Division 1 in Dublin in the league. And it was something that I hadn't planned on doing, but I went up there for 2 years and had two great years up there. I really enjoyed it, and I sort of got the spring back in my step, really, to be honest with you, to stay involved. And we got back up to Division 1 in the second year, and Ballyboden beat us in the quarterfinal championship. And but I really enjoyed that up there, and it was a different sort of culture up there as well, and it took me out of my comfort zone as well to see what way everything was run up in Dublin as well. And then Owlert came calling. We hadn't been in quarterfinals, and the team was starting to age, and they were looking to change things, and I came in and did that, but that didn't all go down according to plan as well, because when you're trying to do things differently maybe than fellas have been on the team for 12, 13, 14 years that really don't want to do what you're bringing in to do, and they have their own ideas, and things change and things happen, and so I wasn't all plain sailing with Owlert as well. And I was
beginning to I didn't realise you were over Ballantyre St. John's, so you've taken no real break from management. I thought you took 2 years off. Do you notice the young lads now, because I often hear it from managers and you see it up in Portlaoise, that they have an answer for everything and they're different than, they'd be more in my mould maybe than your mould, if you know what I mean. Maybe think they know it all kind of thing. Do you notice a difference with the younger players than maybe, you know, 10 years ago?
Well, as I found out with Owlert there, it wasn't the younger players that know it all, it was the older players that thought they knew it all, you know.
Right.
And I had a few stalwarts there that probably 10 county medals and a Leinster Club medal in their back, and they wouldn't hold for me this year, you know. So you just had to get on without them. If they didn't want to do what you wanted to do, you move it on. And looking at the young man's game as well, and what I wouldn't have found the younger players, really. You just, you have to adapt with it, Colin, to be honest with you. You know, times are changing and everything is changing, and you know, you do things in your own time as well, and it just doesn't work, you know. So you have to adapt with change and try and deal with guys as well as best you can, and give them an opportunity. And I'd like to think that I give lots of fellas a fair opportunity in Albert Ballack this year, and it certainly rewarded me, you know, over the course of the couple of months that we could go at it, like. And you know, I'm grateful to those fellas, but look at it, it's part of your life, I suppose, and you're involved in it, and you try and do your best, and it's your club, and you try and do your best for it. And sure, like Wexford, when I'm finished with Albert Ballack there, whenever it is, whether it's now or next year, whenever it is, I hope that I'll be after leaving it in a better place than when I took it over.
Exactly. And are you open to potentially manage another county, or is that off bounds?
You're the first man that's asked me that there in a very long time there now. I'd have no answer to that, to be honest with you now. It's not something I'd even think about, to be honest with you. I suppose I got the feeling back last Sunday evening, Colm, and Monday morning on how bad a 1-point defeat really is. But you know, when you sit down and you're disappointed and everything, and you look at what's happening in the country and the world at the moment there, it's a reality check as well. Like, that you should be delighted that we had the opportunity to get out in Wexford Park last Sunday evening and hurl against Gorey and give it your all, and if you're good enough, you're good enough, and if you're not, you're not, and there'll always be another day. But there's a lot more, you know, things going on in the world and in the country at the moment there that people have bigger problems than losing a county semi-final by a point, I suppose.
Yeah, well, that's true. Come here, who do you fancy in the final before I let you go? They can't be separated, really. It's a very even game, is it?
Yeah, it's going to be a humdinger of a game, I have to say now. And look at it, I give both teams. I'll do a Tom Dempsey on it there. I might sit in the fence there a little bit, but you take Gorey, for instance, Colin. Young Jack Cush is in the goal there, son of Gerard, the third of Wexford there, and with myself there, and good young goalkeeper there. You know, they've got defenders, Owen Conroy, the captain of Wexford under 21 team, success, along with Benny Travers, who captained the team in 2018. But they've got a few sets of brothers there in the Doyles and the Malloys, and they're, you know, they're really good hurlers, like, to be fair to them, all sprinkled all over the field. But they have a guy, the player's left half back, he's 6'3". Fine athlete of a man by the name of Jack Kelly, young player as well, and potentially, if you know, I know he was asked in by Davey a few years ago and he didn't commit to it, but he's a guy that I think there should be everything done humanly possible to get him into the Wexford setup.
Right.
He's athletic, he's a really good hurler, and you know, when Gorey really needed a player to stand up last week against ourselves, he was the man that drove him on, like, in the second half. But and I suppose I haven't even mentioned Conor McDonald or Cathal Dunbar yet, like, before you get to them. So they're a really strong, balanced team all over the field, like. And, you know, it wasn't a fluke that they won the county final 2 years ago, and they're back in it again. But they're coming up against a dual team as well, like, in the Shelmaliers, which have solely been able to concentrate on hurling this year so far. Simon Donoghue will be their talisman that's on the Wexford team. But, you know, Brian Malone, I know him, Brian Malone there to change over from the football to the hurling there a few years ago, and I met him twice and he didn't come with me anyway, but I would have always picked him out as a really good hurler, and himself and his brother Glenn, you know, they're really good players as well with the two Cashes.
Would Brian Malone go back in on Conor McDonald? You'd imagine he'd have the physicality. I couldn't imagine Simon Donoghue being able for McDonald in the air, would he?
Well, look, I don't know. You would not know what way they'll match up. Like, they've got a right so far, in fairness, the Shells have, you know. But, you know, they have a young player, two young players that I think are outstanding prospects, not just for the Shells, but for Wexford as well. And young Conor Hearn, that plays middle of the field. And they have a young guy by the name of Ross Bandle, who he's the free taker.
Oh, yeah, full forward.
Really, really good player now, this guy. Speed as well. Picked up a few injuries over the last 2 years, just knocked them back a little bit, but. And then they've got this guy by the name of Sean Keane Carroll that's coming in, getting scores for him. Tall, lanky guy, but good hurler. But it's a tough one to call, Colin, to be honest with you now. And it's going to be a humdinger of a game, because the two teams met in the group stages there a few weeks ago, and there was only a point in it. But if it's going to, like, Gorey won by a point, but if it's going to sway the other way, it'll be the loss of Owen Malloy. He's a huge loss to Gorey. He's picked up a cruciate ligament in the quarter final at the championship And if it comes down to the wire, it could be the factor that they could lose Gorey the final, his loss, you know, when it comes to it. But if I had to stick my neck out, Conor McDonald is going to need to score a goal or two for Gorey to win the game. And I think they might just win it by a point at the end again, because they've won three games already by a point.
Yeah.
I see no reason why they won't win the county final by a point on Sunday, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, you've made me
looking at it a little bit, saying, well, we could have been there, but we're not there.
Yeah, you've made me look forward to it as well. I'm sure everybody else, Liam. And the great thing, it's on television, so you don't have to worry about not being able to go into it, which is another argument here that we won't get into now, which seems like a good one. I'm sure everyone will be looking forward to it after that. Come here, Liam. Thanks very much for taking the call.
No problem at all, Colm. No problem. Thank you.
Christoph from Liam there, we'll look forward to that one on Sunday. And I should have said earlier that the Killarney Legion and Cairns O'Rattley's game is on TG Cahir as well on Sunday. So we have three games on Sunday. I didn't put in the Kerry match at the start of this section. Right, we'll leave it there and we'll be back on Monday as usual, and we'll take a look back at the weekend's action. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance of goal, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through, but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, cause I won't see you later, and we're not allowed to talk.